Welcome to Movie Maniacs. Mike Rags and Chuck Curry discussing the greatest movies of all time and all the new films in theaters and streaming that you need to know about. Like us, rate us, share us. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
All right, Chuck, we are back with another COVID-19 edition of Movie Maniacs as we are both podcasting from our respectable homes. And again, if you're listening on WoWo 1190 107.5 FM, welcome to the show. COVID-19 and the coronavirus taking some lives, obviously, in the entertainment world. Chuck and I are going to look back at the career of Brian Dennehy, who actually died not of the pandemic. So he died at the age of 81. We're going to look back at maybe one of the best character actors of all time, at least for our generation, at least, and his illustrious career and all his great roles. We'll do that in a bit and have some movie news and some trailers that hit the streaming services that I want to bring up and a whole heck of a lot of fun. Chuck, how you doing today? Surviving?
I'm hanging in there, Mike. One day at a time, one hour at a time. And, trying to look at the industry as a whole and see where, you know, film is going to go. There is some interesting stories, though. One was they did a poll of 2,000 people and came up with the consensus that on average right now, people, for the most part, confined to their house are streaming an average of 8 hours of content per day. And what I did find about this brief survey, that 58% of those people, Mike, binge watch content that they have watched before, like The Sopranos or Breaking Bad or The Walking Dead, not necessarily delving into new content, but reliving stuff that they found enjoyable, like The Sopranos, which has been off the air now for, I think, 11 or 12 years. Very interesting stuff.
Yeah, and I've been watching and streaming a lot myself. And I got to tell you, I think I've brought it up. I finished Ozark.
Okay.
And I'm on, by the way, my daughter and I are beginning to watch Space Jam because it is Michael Jordan weekend. I don't know if you knew that, Chuck, because the ESPN showing that documentary. I'm really looking forward to that documentary. And we've been streaming, watching stuff, and spending most of our time doing that. There's really nothing much you can do, Chuck. And I did notice that they did announce Artemis Fowl, the big Disney movie, which is supposed to hit theaters later on this summer, big movie summertime release, is now going to be a streaming release June 12th on Disney Plus, Chuck. This is pretty big news. Maybe the first major release that's going to go straight to streaming. But the interesting thing about this is still 2 months out, and they're already making this call that it's not going to be in theaters. You know, that's a little disconcerting.
It is. When you see things going out months on end, it is. When people are looking for hope and they want to see light at the end of the tunnel, you sort of in some way shut that light off. And that's, fairly depressing. Cinemark did make an announcement, though, one of the three major movie chains, one being Cinemark, the other AMC and Regal. Cinemark says they would like to start up operations once again by July 1st, rehiring employees 2 weeks before. They did do a survey stating that most people do want to go back to the movies in the rollout they did yesterday in this administration made a suggestion to the states when they listed movie theaters, saying that movie theaters could open when the phase one of the rollout happens. Obviously, spacing, I don't know what that spacing would entail. Cinemark, the CFO of Cinemark, did state that the theater would still be very profitable if they had half capacity, meaning you could easily put people 10 feet apart. I guess the question is, would you feel comfortable? It's not the right word. Would you be okay wearing a mask, watching a movie in a movie theater? I'd be fine with that. If I was spaced out 10 feet and I was wearing a mask, as long as nobody was coughing out loud, I would be fine going back. Thoughts on that?
How would get the popcorn in your mouth though? That's going to be difficult to do
that,
with a mask
that would
on.
Be that is an issue because again, very good issue because theaters make their profit off the concession stand, so they need to sell popcorn and need to sell soda. And could they keep a social distancing in full effect on a concession stand line? There are obstacles here, but I do believe people would want to go back to some extent to somewhat of daily life, which is going to the movies, which is a big part for millions and millions of people in this country.
Well, due to my schedule, I used to often go during the day anyway, and there's really nobody ever there in the midday to begin with. So there's plenty of social distancing going on there, Chuck.
Agree.
But I also find it interesting that it's going to the streaming service, Disney Plus, and you're going to get it with your subscription. They're not even banking on, you know,
VOD.
I guess they're people that don't have Disney Plus will try to buy it, I guess, off Amazon, stuff like that. But I'm just a little surprised that they're not going to at least for a month or so, because that's what they did with Onward. Onward, you could buy for a little bit, and then it went
a little,
to streaming.
just a little though, and it went pretty much to Disney Plus. One other tidbit to bring up during this conversation was Trolls World Tour was the first major theatrical film scheduled to be released in theaters in 4,000 plus screens. It had to be $100 million plus animated film with the voice of Justin Timberlake and what's her name?
Justin Timberlake and Anna Kendrick.
Okay. Yeah. That DreamWorks released that straight to VOD a week ago. They did not release the official numbers, but did state that the movie played 10 times better than any first weekend VOD movie ever at a price tag of $19.99. So they seem to be pleased with the result of what it did on VOD, video on demand. I would love to know the final total though. Dollar wise,
I did enjoy Onward a lot. I got a chance to see it with my daughter the past week, and it's another one of Pixar's dead on hits. There's no doubt about it. And Chris Pratt, obviously, and Tom Holland were your voices in that. So it's a really, really sweet, another sweet Pixar movie. Chuck, did you get a chance to see the trailer to the musical remake of Valley Girl, which hit streaming yesterday? The trailer
I did not. Thoughts on that one?
I'm interested that the fact that they made it a movie musical, which is really fun. But the gal you like, Jessica Toth, is the star of the film.
Cool. Okay.
Happy the Death Day 1 and 2 she's in. And it looks like Alicia Silverstone's got a nice little role in it as well. So it's actually a throwback film. The 80s play a predominant part in it, and
Nick Cage is the star of the original, right?
Yeah,
who's the girl in the original? Who's the girl?
Deborah Foreman. No sign of either one of them being in this film, but interesting that will be, again, when it comes out, who knows or how it comes out, Chuck, for sure. So I did get a chance to see that trailer as well. What other movie news do you got before we move on to Fast Five and then look at Brian Dennehy?
Just a couple things. New Line Cinema, which is a division of Warner Brothers, announcing they're going to do a big screen version of Stephen King's Salem's Lot. Now, people remember 1979. It was a very big, popular TV film that wound up playing very well on VHS, Salem's Lot in 1989. I believe James Mason was one of the stars of that, along with David Soul, right, of Starsky and Hutch fame. That was actually pretty good. They remade that for a TV movie in 2004 with Rob Lowe. Believe that aired on TNT. It was okay viewing. I think with the popularity of It in theaters, Stephen King has become a hot property again. They're you know, scouting for all Stephen King material to reboot or redo. I guess Salem's Lot is a good choice, Mike.
Yeah, I would think so. Danger though, don't do Firestarter again. I think maybe that was just one too many movie adaptations.
I think they actually plan on doing Firestarter again.
Oh boy!
Also, so and I know that J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot for HBO Max is going to do a spin-off of The Shining on HBO Max, and also Justice League Dark is going to be a property on HBO Max. That's a coup for HBO Max. Anytime you get you know, superhero characters in the Justice League universe, they're different characters than were in the Justice League movie. This is not Batman, Superman, Aquaman, Flash, but still, HBO Max appears to be putting his big toe into big-time properties. Just one other bit of movie news of interest. Universal announced that they're going to do another big-screen version of Green Hornet. Green Hornet and Kato is going to be called. Seth Rogen took a stab at it, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago. Very strange cast. I thought it was a watchable movie. Christoph Waltz played the villain in that one. It was an interesting watch, but not really what I wanted to see. I guess, listen, they're going to dust the mothballs off every property they could possibly find if it has a superhero tinge to it. Green Hornet and Kato, if you cast right, I guess, and you hire the right director and got a decent screenplay, I think you'd make an interesting property, no?
Absolutely. But where, again, all this is where do these movies land, and how we watch them is really the question more than anything else. And, you know, when do movies start going into production too, Chuck, with those social distancing? I mean, I guess it would be post May 15th because that's what.
Right. I mean, yeah, all roads lead to May 15th on to see when they're going to open up society to some form other than, you know, takeout restaurants, which is not a good business model. I, for one, being in the food industry also, it doesn't work as a business model as a whole. I can't wait to get things back to semi-normal. And, you know, Matt Reeves was talking about the Batman or Robert Pattinson. That film, I think they shot like 25% of it. So they still have 75% of that movie to shoot. It's going to be interesting when you're off for – you know, you shoot 20%, you got to come back 2-3 months later to shoot the rest of the film, the momentum, the chemistry. Weird times indeed, Mike.
No doubt about it. And one more bit of news. We talked about Trolls World Tour coming out. It looks like My Spy with David Bautista will be released streaming over the weekend this weekend. And I bring it up because, Chuck, I did want to mention I got a chance to see Final Score. Which came out a couple of years ago. You may or may not remember this movie. It was a Die Hard at a soccer game.
Yeah, I remember seeing the trailer.
And Pierce Brosnan's co-star in this. Ray Stevenson's your bad guy. And I got to tell you, has every single element to every one of those movies that were made through the 80s through today. And it works just like all the other ones. And we've talked about David Bautista over and over and over again. I think he's got a great screen presence. He's got humor in this movie as well. There's some really good action scenes and a lot of production value to this film. I don't want to go too crazy on it because it almost plays like a carbon copy to Jean-Claude Van Damme's Sudden Death. But it's really...
I like that movie a lot.
But considering you're trapped in a in your house, quarantined, you want to watch an action movie, brainless action movie, that you could just sit down and enjoy for 90 minutes, I would go and see Final Score, Die Hard at a soccer game. And it's amazing how little screen time Pierce Brosnan actually has in this film, considering they could have gotten anybody to play this part, but he's in it and adds some star power, I guess, to the film. But David Bautista, plenty of options for him out there, and that's one of them. So I wanted to bring it up. And I know we're fans of the genre, and the genre just seems to work when you have all the elements in place, Chuck.
I agree. And if you look at the concept, you got the Die Hard films. The original Die Hard came out in 1988, and then you had Under Siege,
yep,
and Under Siege 2. Both those movies work. Sudden Death and Speed obviously works, and then you had Passenger 57,
yes,
with Wesley Snipes. Yep. I mean, that concept does work every time.
And I think you actually had an Andrew Dice Clay, Shannon Tweed movie. I think Roddy Piper's in this film where it was a beauty pageant.
Right.
Chuck. Speaking of Piper, as we go into Fast Five here, he won't be one of the Fast Five, but he would have had a birthday this weekend, Chuck, okay, believe it or not. He's been dead now almost 5 years.
Wow.
He would have been 66. Look, we all know your love for They Live. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you this. His best wrestling moment for you.
There's numerous ones. One, probably when he hit Jimmy Snooker over the head with a coconut.
That was my favorite.
But I loved him when they turned him from heel to good guy.
Yeah.
And he went on the flower shop with Adrian Adonis, and he took back Piper's pit. I thought that was pretty cool moment also.
Yeah.
You know, I was at the anniversary of WrestleMania 1 was a few weeks ago. And I went. I remember going. I was at WrestleMania 1 in Madison Square Garden in New York City. And it was Hulk Hogan and Mr. T with Jimmy Snuka in the corner against Roddy Piper and Paul Orndorff with Cowboy Bob Orton in the corner. Pretty awesome moment. But, you know, as much and as many wrestling moments, I had a great time. And the best wrestling match I ever went to, it was at Madison Square Garden, and it was the height of the Iran-Contra stuff, and it was Sergeant Slaughter against the Iron Sheik when people thought wrestling was real, and the fans went absolutely bonkers. And I tell you, the security that the Iron Sheik had to have around him at that time was unbelievable. I mean, I think the Secret Service was doing double duty. I mean, that's how much security. But that was incredible. And when Sergeant Slaughter pinned him, I mean, the Garden went absolutely bonkers, Mike.
I remember that like it was yesterday.
Incredible.
Yeah, incredible, incredible stuff. Yeah. So I wanted to bring up Piper, and I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up his couple of appearances on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia were brilliant as well. All right, Chuck, before we get to Brian Dennehy's career as he passes away at the age of 81, and before we get to Fast Five, there were a couple other deaths of note, and they were coronavirus-related. And one we didn't get a chance to talk about last week, but Alan Garfield, the character actor, passed away from COVID-19. For me, there's two roles that pop to mind with Alan Garfield, and you probably wouldn't think of it on the beaten path, but one, he's the police commissioner in Beverly Hills Cop 2, and he's got a couple of funny scenes with Eddie Murphy there. He's also very good in Teachers. He's the one that gets bit in the hand by Matthew Modine.
Yeah, I remember him very much in Teachers.
Yeah,
I like that movie. That's Teachers is one of the movies that came out in the unbelievable year of 1984. I mean, I've seen Teachers like three times in a movie theater because I like Nick Nolte so much. Sort of a mixed tone in that movie, serious and comedy, but it has very, very powerful, interesting messages in that film. But I do remember him a lot in Teachers in 84.
Yeah, and Alan DeVeo dies. He was the choreographer, cinematographer for both E.T.
Yeah, I saw that yesterday.
And Empire of the Sun. He was 77 years old. So he also paired up with Spielberg for Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So lost a great visionary there as well. All right, let's do Fast Five before we get through Brian Dennehy's career, which is a lot of great movies. Chuck, we'll start with one you brought up off the air when we started, Jennifer Garner. Having a birthday today. She is, how old are we saying here now, Chuck?
48 years old.
48 years old. Unbelievable.
She was born in that magical year of 1972 when the Poseidon Adventure was released.
Maybe she's a Poseidon Adventure baby. Who knows?
I hope so. I hope so.
Of course, really got superstardom with Alias, yes. The big series back in 2001. But when you think Jennifer Garner, you think what role?
You know what? For me, I'll tell you a quick story. I remember going with my wife. In 2000, I think it was 2004, going to see 13 Going on 30, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm watching that movie, and I'm saying to myself, highly enjoying that film when I was released. I'm watching in the theater, her pairing of Mark Ruffalo, very nice, sweet chemistry. And I said to myself, this is the next Julia Roberts, Mike. Yeah. I thought the screen absolutely loved her. She's tremendously appealing. That little montage scene to Pat Benatar's Love is a Battlefield when she's jumping up and down on the bed in the slumber party with those young girls. And I'm like, you know what? Boy, oh boy, she's so appealing. And the fact is, that movie did not make the money it deserved to make. I mean, it did okay. It was not a major blockbuster, but it was a highly appealing, highly entertaining film. It's interesting. If I held up a picture to 100 people of Julia Roberts and I said, what's this person's name? I'd say 98 would say Julia Roberts. If I held up a picture of Jennifer Garner, I would still say 80% would say that's Jennifer Garner. And then my other criteria at the time, if I held up a picture, Mike, of Rachel McAdams, who I also find very appealing, I'm a big fan, how many people out of 100 I would say no more than 40, no more than 40 or 50, right? Well, even though she's very talented, very appealing. To be a household name is a high honor. Jennifer Garner's a household name.
I would say that people would say, oh, that's the girl from either Mean Girls or Notebook, but they have a hard time pointing out what
the majority
name is.
Yeah, I agree with that.
For me, Jennifer Garner I like the most in Draft Day. I thought as the draft comes up next week, I thought she was very good in that movie opposite Kevin Costner, even though
I like that movie too.
She's about 20 years younger than him, but we're not going to really get into that right now.
That's fine. And let me ask you another question. When I saw her in Daredevil, where I believe she met Ben Affleck, became a husband, Screen loved her in Daredevil. Screen loved her in Daredevil. I got to tell you, when she agreed to do Elektra, it's one of the worst sequels of all time. I mean, it has nothing to do with that character she played in Daredevil.
Nope.
Whoever came up with the screenplay of that one, boy, oh boy, that movie's bad.
Chuck, William Holden would have been 102 years old this weekend, his birthday, April 17th. And obviously, iconic roles in Stalag 17 and Network, and of course, one of our favorite movies, Towering Inferno.
You know, he did a movie. He did a movie that I wind up watching in school when they did film class called Picnic. Mm-hmm. I like that movie. William Holden, let me tell you, William Holden had a drinking issue.
Sure.
And he aged much harder than he should. But when you look at that guy earlier in his career, he's a really good-looking leading man. He was a heck of an actor. But his great performance to me is in Network. You watch him in Network. Acting does not get better than that. And there's a scene in that movie where he's having an argument with his wife in that film and talking about why he has left her to be with the Faye Dunaway character. That is as emotional, as powerful, and as absolutely real as acting gets. He was great. And obviously he was in the Towering Inferno by third billing, wanted top billing alongside Paul Newman and Steve McQueen. They didn't give him top billing, but he got third billing. And I'm a fan. William Holden was really good.
Yeah, for me, he's forever known for me as Jim Duncan in Towering Inferno. But I did like his last role, too, in SOB. That was a pretty good Blake Edwards movie about the movie industry.
Very popular, too.
Yeah, very popular. Well, James Woods, I admired a lot more than I do right now, Chuck. But he's celebrating a birthday this weekend. He's 73 years old. He's done a lot of great work, especially early in his career in the 80s and 90s. James Woods, what movie pops out?
I tell you, first time I saw James Woods was one of the great miniseries of all time called Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
He's always a good actor. Digstown comes to mind.
Good one. Yeah,
just give me a couple off the top of my head. I'll tell you what I like.
I liked him a lot in Salvador, Oliver Stone movie that he did. And remember, they paired him up with Michael J. Fox for The Hard Way in 1991. Mm-hmm. Which was a little off base, and he pops up in movies like Contact and White House Down and movies like that. He adds a little certain something to those movies, but I like Digstown as a good pick, and he's really, really good in Casino, although he's not in it a lot, but he's a real scumbag in Casino.
Yeah. No, he's James Woods, a really good actor.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. He definitely has a screen presence. There's no doubt about it. How about Dudley Moore? Dudley Moore would have been 85.
Well, there's a signature role for Dudley Moore, and that's Arthur. And it's interesting because also this week, John Gielgud was born on this day this week. He played Hobson. Talk about screen chemistry. Dudley Moore, John Gielgud, Arthur Bach, and his butler Hobson in the 1981 comedy classic Arthur. What a big hit. It's interesting because I talked about this to somebody the other day, how Arthur was so well embraced by filmgoers in 1981, and they laughed at the concept of alcoholism. And then when the sequels made Arthur 2, the subject matter just wasn't funny anymore. But I love Dudley Moore.
Yeah, it's great. I loved him in Foul Play, and I thought, you know, I think
and of course 10 was a big hit.
10 was ridiculously funny. And I thought Crazy People was a funny movie too from 1990. I think I might have brought it up a couple weeks ago where he's an ad exec that goes into a crazy and they start making commercials.
Daryl Hannah's in that
movie. Daryl Hannah, very good. James Franco, Chuck, last but not least, Oscar-nominated actor, is 42 years old, and he's done a lot of stuff that I don't admire, but he's also done a lot of really good roles, and it all started for him back with Judd Apatow in the back in the day with Freaks and Geeks. That's where I first saw him.
Yeah,
but
he played, and he was in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man films,
sure,
which is what a lot of people were introduced
sure.
to him. He played what he played. Harry does Green Goblin's son, Harry Osborn.
Yeah.
He got big recognition for the Danny Boyle movie. What was it? 127 hours. Was it?
I think that's his best role for me. Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah, probably.
And I know you did like The Disaster Artist from a couple of years back too. I
love that film. Yeah. I love that film. Yep. He got shut up a little bit in the Me Too movement. Maybe I don't know if how it's hurt his career or not.
True.
I'm not judging him on that, but I'm just saying. But yeah, he's been around for a long time now.
All right, Chuck, a guy that's been around for a really long time, and I admired him a lot in every movie he was in, and he's been in a ton of them, movies and TV. Chuck, just well over 183 credits to his name, and as Brian Dennehy, who died at 81, and we're going to go through his career and kind of the hits and high points. And when you hear an essential Brian Dennehy movie that we talk about here, please make note of it. And then we'll talk about when we hit it, his best movie of all time. The first time I remember seeing Brian Dennehy was as Chevy Chase's partner in Foul Play back in 1978. But I'm reminded that he was also in movies like Fist and Semi-Tough and Looking for Mr. Goodbar before then. But again, in much smaller roles. I just remember him as Fergie in Foul Play because I'm a big fan of that movie. I was 8 years old, and we bring up Dudley Moore. He's got some funny scenes in that. It was Chevy Chase's first cinematic movie, and pairing with Goldie Hawn. But the fact that Brian Dennehy could actually catch my attention in a movie with all that other stuff going on is the fact that he did have some sort of – I think he was just bigger than life, and Foul Play for me was the first time I remember him. Do you remember the first time – you saw Brian Dennehy and really said, "Oh, this guy's got something."
I probably like, in a lot of ways, probably like most when, you know, I watched First Blood, which is the first Rambo film.
Right.
He, that's really his claim to a higher prominence in the industry.
But he does really have roles. He does have a role in 10, along with Dudley Moore too. Yeah. That a lot of people reference to. I saw over the last day or so. He plays the bartender in that.
But he's iconic, I think, in First Blood, because that movie of all the Rambo movies, that one's the one that's grounded in a reality. It has a believability to it, and you could see how the way Dennehy plays that small town sheriff, where you could see the believability.
Well, here's the key,
that role is.
You can see that he approaches that role. He thinks he's the good guy.
Yes.
In the movie, you know,
it's almost a little bit similar, not quite to what Tommy Lee Jones did in The Fugitive. A little bit, not to that same extent, because I think Tommy Lee Jones's character is a lot more embraced when you're watching that movie than Dennehy's character would be when you're watching First Blood. But you could see the psychology of Dennehy's character,
exactly
the way he plays that in First Blood,
and that's a brilliant depiction of that. And to me, it's essential Brian Dennehy watching, of course.
Absolutely,
there's no doubt, and maybe even his best role. And we'll talk about that more later on. And ironically, I did watch Rambo Last Blood this past week, Chuck, on streaming service, and what a hodgepodge of a mess this movie is. Of just how I couldn't get over how gory it wanted to be. And it's depiction of how he's just plowing away people at the end of this film. And it's a far cry. Like, you watch that movie, and there's no way he's the same John Rambo as we saw in 1982.
It's interesting, because the one before that was violent.
Yes.
But it was. But there's the difference between this one that you're talking about, the last one, which came out in theaters earlier this year, which I saw theatrically. I would just like to know, because I have so much respect for Stallone and what he's done with Rocky Balboa. And he's done that character right. His choices are right. After Rocky V, a film I still like, he does, you know, when he did Rocky Balboa, maybe my favorite Rocky film. And then he does the two Creed films, which are great. To me, I think they're great movies.
Yeah.
I just like to know when he agreed to do this Rambo movie. Obviously, when he sits down, this had to have a discussion about what the tone would be, where the script would go, because he gets screenwriting credit. I don't understand the psychology behind what they did here. Like, it feels when you watch this film, when the movie's over, it feels like you got to run and take a long bath, or at least a long shower. It has a real dirtiness to it, and it's nasty, and it's And there's a scene in the film where the Rambo character is beat up, yeah, and mocked. It's so unpleasant. Unpleasant.
It almost seemed like it was directed by Rob Zombie at points.
Yeah, it's nasty stuff.
And the movie took glee into some of the gore.
It did. Not that it's not watchable. Not that it's not like, okay, you sit there and go, oh, this movie's awful. It's just ill-advised would be the better word, right?
And it bastardizes the character, I think. It's just it doesn't need to be a First Blood movie. It could have just been anything. And somehow John Rambo's got a Mexican
It's almost like when you think of Independence Day, you just make believe Independence Day 2 does not exist.
Yeah.
In the Rambo canon, I don't think I'll revisit that entry.
No. Well, we're not doing Brian Dennehy any service bringing up talking about this movie way too long.
Okay.
but he does go on in the early 80s. He's got roles in Gorky Park and movies like – and he pops up on TV. He's got a TV series called Star of the Family, which I don't remember at all. But – his next time back in the big screen and back in the moviegoer's eyes is in 1985, back-to-back movies, Cocoon and Silverado comes out. Two opposite roles. He's a bad guy in Silverado, and Cocoon, he couldn't be any sweeter as the alien that comes to the old folks' home.
Yeah, well, he could do both. That was unique about him. He could play the villain really well. He could play nice and sweet really well. I think what set him apart, it was his physical appearance. He's a mountain of a guy. He's a big presence with a big personality one way or another.
And you know, when he lowers his eyelid and the cocoon and all the, and you find out he's an alien, that's essential Brian Dennehy watch too. That's one of his best movies and one of his best roles, Cocoon. Silverado's great, don't get me wrong, Lawrence Kasdan, fun western, but Cocoon to me is the better of the two.
Mm-hmm. Agree.
And then my favorite Brian Dennehy movie comes out in 1985 at the end of the year. And I really loved his pairing with Brian Brown in the movie FX, which gets a lot of cult following. It was it was a minor hit at the time.
It was a minor hit, but it had almost instantaneous cult following.
And Siskel and Ebert loved it. I love FX. I think that's the best. He plays Lieutenant Leo McCarthy. This movie did so well, Chuck. They did a sequel to it, FX2. It didn't do as much business, and it wasn't as good, but it's fun to watch. The pairing between the two was really
good. That was fun. And Brian Brown was a different type incarnation of Michael Caine. And he was really good, and his pairing that was a nice pairing. That is a nice film. Now the sequel, not as good.
But there are some good FX scenes. It's very watchable in it.
Yeah, but the original is real good.
And the two definitely have chemistry in it as well. There's
absolutely
no doubt about it. FX is followed up by Legal Eagles in 1986, where he actually is the bad guy in this film. Spoiler alert, you don't find out until halfway in. But he plays opposite Robert Redford and Deborah Winger. I enjoyed that film. Ivan Reitman directed it. I think it's a light comedy with Robert Redford. And Brian Dennehy pops up in that. And then he teams up with James Woods, Chuck, in a movie called Bestseller in 1987. He plays a former cop who writes a book. James Woods is a bad guy. They team up. I don't remember much of this movie other than having these two iconic character actors team up, and it didn't work. Script was off.
I don't remember a lot about it. I remember watching it at home on VHS. Did not see that one theatrically.
Cocoon the Return, he pops up uncredited in 1988, Chuck. They did make that sequel. Ron Howard not involved. Some of the act, Don Ameche not in it. Wilford Brimley and Steve Guttenberg do come back.
Courtney Cox is in it.
I some reason this movie hits its mark. And a lot of it has to do with maybe because Don Ameche's not in it.
Yeah, it's not as good. I mean, it's very watchable, though. It's just not as good as the original film.
Chuck, another one for me that is essential watch for Brian Dennehy is playing – Harrison Ford's boss in the 1990 Presumed Innocent, where he could be a bad guy. He might have killed the Greta Scacchi in this movie, might not have. I really enjoy this movie a lot. Directed by Alan J. Pakula, based on Scott Turow's book. Love this movie.
Yeah, it's a good film.
He adds a lot to that film. He'd follow that up with FX2. Chuck, do you remember in 1992 movie, not the other Gladiator movie, the boxing movie Gladiator, where he plays a shady promoter?
I do remember that. He's pretty intense in that film.
He is.
He's very intense in that film.
You also might remember that's Cuba Gooding Jr. as one of the boxers in that film.
Yeah.
I remember that on on video.
Yeah, you too.
Some people, it's underrated.
He's pretty nasty in that movie, if I remember.
He is. Yeah. He's a real nasty guy. Chuck, he does a lot of TV movies as well, where he'd play a cop, or he played Jack Reed based on that series of books. He'd also be in a TV miniseries called Birdland, where he plays chief psychiatry at a hospital. So he's always working. And then I think most people in America, they see a picture of Brian Dennehy, 1995. He is a Tommy Boy's dad to a lot of people.
Movie has a lot of mileage on that movie, Mike. That movie has grown. I remember seeing that in the theater. That was easily my favorite Chris Farley movie. That movie was highly enjoyable on first viewing, and it has a very nice popularity to this day.
And how fun is it to watch him and Chris Farley on screen together and then sing the song together?
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Who else could have played his father?
Yeah, maybe it was good casting.
Maybe John Goodman, but that's about it.
And it appears they had real good chemistry on set.
So, and the untimely death of Chris Farley might have led to an eventual sequel of that film, Chuck, because it gained a lot of steam and a lot of popularity much after the death of Chris Farley, and it's still a damn shame what happened. Still continuing to do a lot of TV movies, HBO movies through the years. And then my dad, actually, when we were texting about it, brought up a movie in 2001, Summer Catch. He plays the manager of the Freddie Prinze Jr. character who plays in the Pawtucket League in baseball, Chuck. Of course, it stars Jessica Biel, but he had a lot of fun in that role too. Summer Catch from 2001.
Don't remember it very well.
You don't remember that movie? Well, do you remember his role in Category 6, Day of Destruction, the TV disaster movie, opposite Thomas Gibson of Dharma and Greg?
I do not.
I'm surprised by that. Hey, he plays another real good bad guy in Assault and Precinct 13, the reboot from 2005 that stars Lawrence Fishburne and Ethan Hawke. He's a heel in this one too, Chuck, but that's a real good remake.
Let me tell you something. When I saw that movie in the theater opening day, it was really cold out. I love that film. That is a terrific reboot of a really good film. He's good in it. The cast is good in it. Ethan Hawke is a fantastic lead in that film. Lawrence Fishburne, John Leguizamo. I like that film tremendously. That's a really, really good film.
And that's, I think, is essential Brian Dennehy watching.
Yeah, really good. Yep.
He also would play Ratatouille's dad in Ratatouille, the Pixar movie, the Disney movie that came out. And then I liked him a lot in The Next 3 Days. I brought up that movie a couple times. He plays opposite of Russell Crowe in that. But as he aged, Chuck, the roles got smaller and smaller, and his appearances, you'd see him on screen. I remember he was in Tag a couple of years ago as one of the characters' dads. He's not in it a lot, but you're like, oh, my God, it's Brian Dennehy. It's great to see him on screen. And I know he had a recurring character on Blacklist that I didn't really watch on NBC because it's on NBC. I don't watch network television much, but he does have a recurring character on the Blacklist for Brian Dennehy.
The Blacklist is a really good show. You know, it's interesting when you point all this stuff out. He had a heck of a career, Mike. He had a really good career. He not only worked consistently, but he was in a lot of high-profile projects. Obviously, he was very, very well respected as an actor. You don't cast that consistently if they don't realize you got the chops and the ability to bring it on every project.
Yeah, and a lot of actors sending out their well wishes. Sylvester Stallone on Twitter, a quote.
Cool, very cool. What'd he say?
He simply was a brilliant performer. He was also a Vietnam vet, and that helped him in the Rambo movie big time. Chuck, and I know Treat Williams was a big fan of his as well, but I think what people might not realize, the movie fans out there, is he might be the quintessential Willie Loman from Death of a Salesman. He performed it on Broadway for the longest time. He did a TV movie as well.
Yeah,
that might be in the industry. You think of Brian Dennehy, you think of his stage work, and you think of Willie Loman.
Yeah, he won two Tonys. One was for that. You know, it's interesting. Acting on film is one thing, but you really have to be a damn good actor to do Broadway. You really do. And he did Broadway. He was really good. Film work was really good. It's a nice legacy.
Yeah.
Very nice.
He actually won a Golden Globe for his TV movie, Death of a Salesman, as well.
Okay.
As mm-hmm. Willie Loman. So, yeah, we lost a great one. And, you know, we lost Robert Forster a year ago and the likes. And we lost Bill Paxton. And I'd be remiss, Chuck, if we didn't bring up Last of the Finest. Do you remember
Last of the Finest? That's another good movie. It's another good – and that's another one that has some nice cult appeal.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the fact that Joe Pantoliano's in it. He's in it. Bill Paxton's in it. I mean, these were the go-to guys to get character actors in bigger movies, and then they all made their own movie together.
They did.
All right, Chuck, that'll wrap things up for this week. We say goodbye to Brian Dennehy. We say hello to our audience again next week when we do it all over again, my friend.
One day at a time, Mike. Always a pleasure. You stay safe.
This has been a presentation of Opt-In Productions. Thanks for listening to Movie Maniacs. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Download one of our archived episodes or listen to our next new podcasts Friday. Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.